It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Many reasons to be relatively concerned. And one of those things is the economy. And they're getting close to this real ID thing. You know, here we go. There's, you know, and it's, I'm not the only one concerned about this. You know, I'm getting emails and stuff from people inside the system that knows this immigration thing was always about bringing about a ID'd populace. Senator Russell Pierce here, you had all kinds. I've had him on the show several times. I know him. We're friendly, but, man, he is one of them. And his whole thing is, you know, the immigration thing has been secondary. You know, as the director of motor vehicles, as he was a former police officer, he's a legislator. It was all this stuff in there tying people into the federal database. Well, if his motivations was just for immigration, well, you know, there's a dark side to it. And here it comes. Well, we also have Dr. Paul had something to say about it. Let's go ahead and hear what he has to say about it. Let's see what he had to say to, when was this? It was today or yesterday. Here we go.
Well, President Obama taking on not only health care reform, but another controversial issue, immigration reform. And a key meeting at the White House tomorrow could be the first step toward that reform and for some very big changes for every American worker. Senators Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham, bipartisan that is, set to sit down with President Obama tomorrow, discussing plans for a national identification card. Now, this thing is meant to crack down on illegal workers, but our next guest says it could crack down on you and your privacy. Congressman Ron Paul is a Texas Republican. He's opposed to this card. Congressman, afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Nice to be with you.
It's a great pleasure to have you. All right, so what's the problem with the national ID card? Because its proponents say this is it. This is the thing that's going to finally help us stop illegal immigrants from coming in here and taking jobs.
Well, we do have a problem with illegal immigration, but I would say the problems of every American citizen carrying their papers for wherever they go is a much worse problem than illegal immigration. Besides, you can take care of illegal immigration otherwise. But people over this decades now in this country, there have been some who have wanted this national ID card, and they're looking for every opportunity to do it. And this is it. I mean, who knows what will come of it? My guess is they'll probably have a GPS chip in there so that they can measure everybody, every instant, no matter where they go. So to me, it violates the whole principles of privacy, the principles of the Constitution, the principles of the Republic. And to me, it's a gross distortion of what we should be doing. It's part of an authoritarian society, and dictatorships have this, but not a republic. We're
okay,
not
but tell me how. Tell me how it's invasive, because what Schumer and Graham are proposing, according to what I read, is your ID card would have either your fingerprint, your thumbprint on there, or it would have a reading of the veins in the back of your hand, and you'd have to be scanned by your prospective employer, and that way, if you know, if it came up that you weren't legal, they would catch you by the scan. How does that? I mean, it's not really GPS with the government following you. How does the scan of your fingerprint bother you?
Well, someday it may do this, but why should you have to do this? And they said, well, the equipment to scan your hand or your card is going to cost about $800. And they say, well, what about somebody who might only have one or two employees and they don't want to buy the equipment? Or you can go to a government office to do this. Can you imagine if the post office takes this up and you stand in line to take your potential employee over and try to get them scanned? I mean, the whole notion of us carrying our papers in everything that we do, every job we get, it will be a national identifying card. One thing that, Graham, I think, are you, we already have Social Security cards.
Right.
Well, I have a Social Security card that says not to be used for identification purposes. That's what the original Social Security card said.
Well, but what about a driver's license? Virtually all of us have one of those.
Yeah, but I don't have to have a driver's license to get a job. You know, I didn't have to have it to come to Congress. I didn't have to show that.
But what about Congressman? You know, the people who are fired up about this, yes, they recognize it would result in somewhat of a loss of civil liberties, but they're very concerned about illegal immigration. And you say there are other ways of controlling it, but we're not doing it.
Well, that's a failure of enforcing our laws. And one of the problems that we have is that we have a failed economic system that makes immigrants a threat to individuals because of our weak economy. So if we had a decent economy, we'd probably be begging for people to come in and work because there would be. And quite frankly, a couple of years ago, I had as many people come to my office looking for immigrants to come in to work as I did people screaming and hollering because we had too many.
What do you think?
We were short.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt. I would want to get your thoughts on this before I let you go. What do you think the government might do to us if we all had a national ID card?
Well, they would monitor everything that we do. And surveillance, the lack of privacy, it's always for good purposes. Everything is for good, and they're going to get rid of illegal immigration. They're going to find the criminals. But they're also going to monitor every single person, every single thing they do. It's sort of this idea of why not have cameras every place on every street corner because we'll catch the bad guy. Well, why don't they have cameras in our house in case there's child beating or wife beating? I mean, that's when one thing leads to another. You either believe in freedom or you don't. If you think you need supervision and surveillance constantly by your government, and right now, the degree of confidence and trust in our government is very, very low. To turn this additional tool over to the government, to me, should outrage the American people. And so far, the people I hear from are outraged.
So interesting to listen to your thoughts on that. The meeting happens tomorrow at the White House. The White House has taken no position on it thus far, but Graham's a Republican, Schumer's a Democrat. We'll see whether they get it through this time. Congressman Ron Paul, thank you so much for your thoughts on it.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, this one's a Republican, this one's a Democrat, and they're both statist. And Obama, I haven't taken a position on this. I'm not sure if I want to be able to track everybody doing anything. He's not sure. He'll decide later. Really? And why? I mean, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, you know, it's always, you know, the rancher wants to keep track of his cattle. It's going to be a lot of food riots. There's going to be hunger. There's going to be, you know, problems. Here we have the percent job losses in post-World War II recessions chart. And there's several recessions, and they define it by so many quarters of loss and blah, blah, blah. You have 48, 53, 58, 60, 69, 74, 80, 81, 90, 2001, 2007. Okay, these are when they have these. And they go down, up and down, percent job losses. And the worst one was 1948. And I'm not really sure why, but it's down to, went down to 5%. Most of them are averaging about 2.5%. And the one we're at now, it's, you know, greater than 6% and still going. We are in uncharted territory. And it's going to come back based on what? You have the unemployment as a percentage of people that are unemployed for greater than 27 weeks. What they do is they've been extending unemployment benefits to just, I don't know, keep people from going as a lynch mob to Washington. I'm not really sure. I mean, it's benefits, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure the people getting the paycheck want it, need it, maybe even demanding it. So they're just, you know, spending more. Now, unemployment insurance was that. I mean, it's taken out of your check and it goes into an account, supposedly. But you know, you think they're just leaving that in a little trust fund like Social Security? Heck no. They spend that too. Well, now unemployment. Since 1969, you have people that file unemployment in over 26 weeks. You know, it's like, half a percent or so. It averages about 0.5%. There was a spike at 2%, 2.5% in 83, 84. But now we're up over 4% of those that are unemployed over 26 weeks. This is just one of the signs. Total non-farm payrolls. You know, this Jack explained this as is that you have the first time since the Great Depression, there has been no job growth for a decade. What happens is you have to have per month so many new jobs created just to employ the growth in our population. Well, we have fewer jobs now than we did over 10 years ago. What does that mean? That means hunger. That means violence. That means riots. It means you need to get chipped.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. It's hard to declare your independence when you are dependent. Don't be dependent. You need to be independent. And the first thing you do is you just say, I declare my independence. I'm good. I own me. Now, how you manifest that, that's a whole other thing. But, I mean, at least you'll just know it. You know what? I am boss of me. I am not property of somebody else. I own me. I am not, somebody may put a gun to my head. Somebody may have a shiny badge and we're going to take your stuff and put your kids in foster care and all this kind of stuff that will, kind of coerce me into being, yes, massa, I'll be good. But to think that it's justified that they do that, man, that's a whole nother level of, man, you need to get unplugged. One of the other charts here that he had is employment to population ratio from 1948 till end of 08. It was an interesting chart. It had showed that you had about 56, 58% employment up till the late 70s, and then it started going up to a peak in around 2000, about 2000 at about 64.5%. So you have a population of, say, you got 100 million, okay? Well, 64 million of them were working. Cool. That's a lot. I mean, how did that happen? Well, it used to be about 56, 58%. What changed? Equal rights amendment effort. I mean, it never passed, but now it's this equal rights thing. You know, women in the workforce. We need to hurry up and, make sure that all the women think that being a homemaker and staying home and helping raise your children, that's bad. That's a bad thing. Then we got government schools for that. That get your butt out there in the workforce so we can raise taxes so that your salary is what pays the taxes, which is about what happens. You know, you'll have the second level breadwinner earner is going to pay the taxes on the first one. You know, that's pretty much how it worked out. So they got the women into the workforce really starting heavy in the early 80s, late 70s. So all of a sudden the population employment to population ratio went way up. Then all of a sudden it plummeted. Now it's back down to the 58%. And it's probably even less than that now. This was end of 08. So you're down to what it was in the 40s, and we still have men and women in the workforce. Bad signs. The next chart, let's see what he's got here. I have no idea what this was. Recession, let's see, percent going. I don't know. I had to have him here to explain a lot of these. A lot of them don't have explanations. Rolling 12-month tax withholdings, net of refunds. You know, this is a chart that shows what the decline is in individual withholding taxes. They're talking about green shoots. We got expanding economy. Economy is expanding. Oh, they're everywhere. Well, how would you know that? What's one of the things that you can look at? You can look at the revenue that's coming into the government from their income tax withholding. Because if I got income tax withholding, You know, that's going to the government, man. They keep track of that pretty good. When it comes to how much money they're getting out of your paycheck, you know, I bet you they got a number for that one, and it's probably, I imagine, fairly accurate. It's what they're getting. Well, it's 6.2% decline in individual withholdings and 54% decline in company withholdings for corporations. So this is an enormous drop. And I don't know how they can say, and this is data up to February of 2010, and it's still going down. So green shoots, where? Why are they telling us this stuff? Based on what? All right, you know, monthly individual and corporate tax withholdings net of refunds in billions of dollars. So what they're looking at here is you look at what the refunds were for this year versus last year. And you can see the money collected and what's going back. And that it's each year it's less than what it was the previous year for the past few years. It's falling down comparison to the previous year. So how do we determine we're having green shoots? Where does that come from? What is it that they're telling us? How do we make that determination? We're being lied to. If you look at the state budgets and so on, here's an article, Insolvent European versus American States. Now, we had in the news a lot about Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain. Pigs. You know, they say pigs. I didn't even know what they're talking about. You know, pigs. Okay, so they're talking about Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, Spain. Spells pigs. They are, I think all of them put together probably isn't as large of an economy as California. California is the sixth largest economy in the world. They're right now, they have a percent of the total budget. Their gap is 22%, which is equated to $22 billion that they're admitting to. I mean, this is just admitting to. And you know it's going to be more. Now, here in Arizona, we got $1 billion, $2 billion, you know, and just they don't count all the other accounting tricks that they did on their buildings and lease backs of this and selling and doing and what. It's all crap. It's a lot more. And then you got some other entitlement things that they have to fund, and you got all kinds of stuff. Obligations they got to promises their pinky swear to local municipalities what they're going to do, blah, 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 blah. Lots of money. California, $22 billion. So what is this worldwide? Is it just here? Is it over there? You know, while all the investing world seems to be utterly fixated on the outcome of Greece's solvency woes, perhaps we need to step back and put this into perspective. Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain are in varied degrees of difficulty. But how significant are the pigs' debts to the world's economy? If they require a workout, perhaps they can do what we do. Give them lower rates, an extended term, and or a, you know, they just go into more bailouts, and the banks are going to, you know, it's just, in contrast, consider the distressed United States. How do our own economic pigs measure up? In terms of economic importance relative to the world, aren't the bigger U.S. states that are in deep distress more important GDP-wise? Well, yeah. I mean, each one of our states are in, you know, you got Arizona here listed at $2 billion, and I know that's crap. So by percentage, you know, California could be Lord knows what. Wow. You know, there is a lot coming. But I want, you know, this whole exercise of us doing this, I just wanted to give you just a kind of an inkling of why when I came back from Missouri, a lot of people called me and said, oh, man, what Jack Gregson said, I mean, dang. Because I've gone through some of this. We've had him on the show before going through some of his charts because he likes doing charts. Charts are easier for him. He can understand it. You know, he's a layman like anybody else. You know, he has some economic background, but he's like, had to show me the chart. I can see. Just, you know, give me some numbers, man. It's easier to understand. So, you know, I'm okay. Where are we at now? State and local government personal income tax receipts. This is from the U.S. Department of Commerce Bureau of Economic Analysis. Now, this is taking into account what is available in to the government in income tax receipts. It is now 20% less over the previous year. And they're increasing spending. What does that mean? More debt. More debt. More debt.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube.
And start adapting, overcome, engage, get ready. You know, how many soup cans you got in your pantry? Well, you know, that's a, you know, the Mormon church is really big here in the valley, and the whole side of my mother's side of the family are Mormon, and my sister, my one of my sisters, Mormon, and I'm telling you, their big thing my whole life growing up, they were always grinding their own wheat, making flour. They were storing lots. So my father and family, we did the same thing. You know, we always had, you know, at least, I don't know, probably at least a year's worth of food. So it just became part of my upbringing. You got to have enough food. You know, why not? I mean, you know, I everybody's going, well, you can't eat gold and silver. And I go, you're absolutely correct. But it's a good store of wealth to just, you know, kind of have for. But right after, you got your guns and butter, you know, right after. Well, we have now, before you had soup lines, when you had the Depression and stuff, I mean, it manifested itself in a lot of ways. You had the boarded up shops, you had the, you know, for lease, for rent, for take me, for somebody move in so they don't steal the copper and the wiring. I mean, you know, this kind of stuff is going on now, and I'm sure it's in your area too. Here in Phoenix, it's pretty bad. You know, Las Vegas, pretty bad. Because we were at the peak. I mean, we were the ones, yee-haw, it's never going to end. God, we knew. Heck, the people in the industry and the construction knew. They're like, there is no way that you're going to be able to sustain this kind of growth for years on years on years. It was amazing it went as long as it did. But we had gone through it before during the savings and loan stuff that happened in the end of the 80s and early 90s, it was exactly the same thing. In fact, I wrote an article predicting this in December 31st, 2002 for Lou Rockwell. It was called Sell Your House Now. Of course, if they sold it then, they'd been really mad at me because they now lowered interest rates and the boom went up for another, what was it, another 3-4 years. So it, but then of course it crashed down below where that was. But it's the point that I was making is I'm going, look, I see the speculative investment. I went through this before. I know what they're doing. It's all pretend. So now what is the modern version of the soup line? Food stamps. They have 35 million people on food stamps right now. It's one of every four children, and by the time they're 18, it'll be one of every two children will have been on food stamps. 35 million right now. That's a lot. And what would have been, what would have happened if they don't do this? I, you know, they've learned in, you know, in the past that by doing, by not having people allowed to at least feed themselves. If you don't feed the masses, you know, the same thing that happened to Marie Antoinette. You know, she goes, let them eat cake. They don't have any bread. They don't have any meat to eat. He goes, well, let them eat cake. I mean, she may have been serious. You know, she's like, yeah, well, don't they have cake? You know, let's go to the other table. There's cake over there. It's always on this other table. I got, there's cake. Dummy. All right. You know, this is, we are at, the average monthly benefit right now is at $140 billion. God, that can't be right. Maybe it's 140 million, but 140 billion in food stamps? I don't know, but it's a lot. Wow, man. Well, I guess you have 35 million people. Yeah, I guess so. You know, $140 billion a month. Oh, my goodness. All right. You know, and we can sustain this how long? Oh, well, you know, we have another chart here that it does the same kind of thing. It shows the percentage of people. It's really high. They were looking at October 05. They had kind of a large increase in food stamps for just a couple of months there due to Katrina. You know, you have different natural disasters here and so on. So it'll jump from, you know, an average like 27 to 30. You know, you got a little percentage there and so on. But then it starts getting into that, gets blown away by the time we get to now. You know, it's up to 39. Now they got it here, 39%. And are you one of them? Are you feeling it? Are you having the problems? What shows are you listening to over the last couple of years? Fox News made you feel better about yourself. We got green shoots. Okay. Is that what's going on? Another thing that Greg was going on about, he's saying that they're pulling back the money supply, the money that is available to be lent out. And he thinks that there's all kinds of different dials and programs that they got and doing different things. But they're of the opinion, along with, I had a gentleman, it was last year sometime. His name's Bob Prechter, and he advertises on Freedom's Phoenix. He's one of the early advertisers. I've known him for a long time because he advocates a very interesting way of looking at things. It's called the Elliott Wave. Elliott was a guy, I guess he's back in the 20s or so, that came up with a way of measuring chaos to see patterns in organic life cycles of different things, like, you know, anything to do with it had life in it, like the weather, you know, floods, anything like that, you know, the migrations. I mean, anything that where you had life, it had fluctuations and you could track it. So I'm like, okay, so he took in that what he saw is fractals, repeating patterns in chaos, is that it wasn't as chaotic as you think, because you're still in boundaries of rules. There are rules. You know, you got gravity's a rule. You can only have, you know, the high temperature of, a low temperature of. Plants can only grow so many months out of the year. You have, I mean, there are boundaries that you have. So what happens is he goes, there is a repeating pattern that you see in a lot of different things. I'll give you an example. You know, you hear the story of, well, like the movie, The Butterfly Effect. You got the beating wings of a butterfly in India determines 200 years later whether you got Katrina or not. I mean, you know, it's just little changes kind of just move different things in different ways, and you have big changes over time somewhere else. It's not too hard to grasp when you're thinking about things like time travel or something like that. What he was talking about is organic systems, and there was a good example I saw on some PBS thing one time or something. They had thousands of years of tracking the flooding of the Nile all the way back, you know, 3,000-4,000 B.C., because the delta there in the Nile, that's was the breadbasket. That's how you had all the people build the pyramids. Heck, we got enough food. You know, we can get them busy doing something. You know, they probably got paid. They got, you know, they say they're slaves and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, a little bit more history, you start finding out, hey, man, you got food here? It's all good. We'll build whatever you want. Give me some food. So this is repeated in the Renaissance. When you start having their warming period, their time of global warming, and you had all this abundance in agriculture, you know, a lot of their time went to the sciences and arts and that kind of stuff. Of course, church is one of their cut. So the Egyptians, during this fertile time, and of course they were in a Nile Valley, the Delta would flood and they would irrigate, and they had the benefit of the Nile there, regardless of what the rain was. What they did is they tracked the flooding of the Nile. And so you got a graph, you know, it had, you know, went this high, and they had big stones that they had set, you know, they know how high it went each year, and it go up and down, and they kept meticulous records, and they put them in stone. I mean, you know, these are records of thousands of years, what the height of the Nile was. And if you put that on a graph, sooner or later, and you start looking for patterns, you see a pattern. You know, it go up, 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 down, 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 up, 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 down, 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 and you see a pattern. Well, you know, was attributed to what? I don't know. Well, life. I mean, you know, it has a pattern. Well, a lot of it probably was attributed to the cycles of the sun. And that's one thing we're dealing with now. Global warming, now global cooling. You know, you had the sunspots start going down. It's getting cold again. You know what are we going to say about global warming? I don't know. I have a sign that, you know, Al Gore's out there that says, what happens when it gets cold? I mean, now what? Well, that's kind of where they're at now. This cycle that you see repeating is called a fractal. It's just a repeating pattern. Well, they saw this in the stock market, too, and it was based on, you know, all of life. I mean, something as complex as the weather, something as complex as, you know, the manifestation was the height at which the Nile would flood, and it would repeat. Well, when you have 5 billion, 6 billion human minds interacting with each other, how do you measure that? Well, they got numbers for it. It's called the stock market. You know, and they tracked this. And they found a pattern. What was that pattern? We'll talk about it when we come back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It ain't so groovy when you're screaming in the night. Let me out of this cheap B-movie. Head on down the highway and you're rushing head. And you think you're so strong, but there ain't no stopping, and you can't stop rocking, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, we can do a little bit about it. We can just be informed. Let's be informed. I want to be a little bit informed. Elliot Wave, let me tell you just kind of the gist of it. Bob Prechter is an investor guy. He's conquered the crash. He predicted a lot of stuff. He's done very well for himself, just kind of, you know, saying, you know, what's up? But he uses a totally different and unique method to do it. And, you know, a lot of people going, nah, poo, 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 poo. And but I've been tracking him since 2003, and I've had him on several times. We're due to do it again. And it is just amazing the mechanism by which he makes his predictions. And it goes like this. There is an organic aspect to the stock market. It is billions of people on this planet interacting with each other, and it creates a mood. I mean, you can have exuberance, you know, just, woohoo, we're going to do it. There's corruption. There's manipulation. There's all, and he doesn't even look at any of that. Doesn't look at the legislation, doesn't even care. Because it's all just a side effect of just the way humanity works. You know, we're an organic system, you know, inside another organic system that's organic, and we're eating organic and we're organic. Okay, it's just, it's life. And it manifests itself in many different ways. One of those ways is through our emotions and how we spend our time and invest our money and, you know, get scared and wars, everything. Well, you can see, especially if you look, and hindsight's always better, you know, but you see these fractals. It's just like the flooding of the Nile, and you'll see stock markets going up and down and individual stocks. When you look at a fractal means, let's say, if you have a pattern of 1,000 years and you see a pattern, you take that pattern, you put it at 100 years, and it matches. It's a repeating pattern, and larger, and it has, you know, a fractal is kind of like a snail's or a nautilus's shell. You know, it just kind of, it has a bigger representation, and it gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. It's just a repeat pattern, but it gets smaller. So it's a repeating pattern. Well, what they do is they look at what is the pattern that they look at. There's, how does it work? It's, I think it's 5 steps up. And 3 down or 2 down. But and we'll get them on. But the bottom line is, it goes, you know, we have a big increase, then it has a little correction, then even bigger increase, then a correction, then a bigger increase, then a big correction. You know, it comes down a lot, then goes up a little bit, and then it plummets. So this pattern is what they look for. They go, yep, it's going up, oh, it's going to go down. He's the one that predicted not inflation, but deflation. And we had him on the show just a few months ago, and he goes, Ernie, yeah, blah, 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 you guys do it. He goes, I'm looking at the patterns here. I, you know, I trust the Elliott wave. I've been doing this for a long time. I know what, you know, I know what everybody says. They keep saying that about me all the time. He goes, we're not going into inflation. We're going into deflation. Now, one of the other people, for a different reason, has been saying deflation has been Ms. Shedlock. He's another economist that we have on every now and then. But Mark Tabor is an investor guy. He's saying, oh, no, no, inflation. No, it's going to be big inflation. Charles Goyette, big inflation. You know, so he's like going to manage the debate between these guys, and we'll get, you know, have them use the studio. They're going to put them in here and go at it, you know, from phones around the world. But they are on two different sides. One thinks it's going to be big inflation. The other one thinks it's going to be big deflation. Well, it's interesting that Prechter looks at it from a different standpoint. It's not facts or legislation or who you know or whatever. It's just a side effect of this wave, of a cycle of what life does. And I'm going, well, how do you determine it? He goes, it's mood, it's emotion. You know, people make decisions, you know, and then all of a sudden you start getting, oh, they're deflating the currency. Right now, they have an enormous accumulation of the dollars they're taking out of the system using various different dials and paying interest, the Fed paying interest on reserves that they're putting into an account, and they pass this law, and they're not lending out this, and they're putting, you know, all this kind of whatever, because now they're starting to worry about inflation. You know, but it's going to have an impact on the economy. It's going to cause deflation. There's going to not be the money out there to be lent. So prices will drop. So you're going to have deflation. When you have deflation and you have all these central banks with all this money they were given that they kind of sit over here and held and did, and, you know, what where'd the money go? Where'd the money go? All of a sudden, everything's really cheap. They're going to buy it up. I saw it happen in the early 90s. It was called Resolution Trust Corporation. The Resolution Trust was created, and now they're bringing the same guys that did that before. They're bringing them back in to government now, trying to get them to do the next thing, getting it all ready, because here it comes. And what the Resolution Trust Corporation did is they took all these assets, these bad loans, these debts, you know, the Phoenician. You know, Charles Keating built this enormous, I mean, it was like the, you know, gold-plated toothbrush thing. I mean, the Phoenician, wow, one of these, you know, the Las Vegas resort kind of deal up against Camelback Mountain. Went bankrupt. They sold it for pennies on the dollar. Big Australia home, nice community out in the middle of nothing, you know, but it just didn't sell because they could. So what did they do with the Resolution Trust Corporation? They took all these assets and they said, now we're going to put all this stuff in this gazillion-dollar thing here and this gazillion-dollar thing here. You know, do I hear a bid for a dollar? I give you $2. Okay, you win. Because, you know, these are enormous. You know, who can afford to buy these things? You know, it's a $100 million thing, and they can get it for $50 million. Cool. You know, they're happy. And they won't sell this stuff at, you know, a development, you know, one house at a time at the time. No, they're selling the entire development. They would have probably got 30, 40, 50% more money if they sold them as individual homes or something. No, it's a defunct development. We're selling the whole development to Bank Z over here. That is going to give us a fraction of what the value is in the street value then. Deflation. So I see that there is benefits to having the prices depressed. It's going to be enormous deflation if they can, because now the guys with the money are going to be the only ones able to buy anything. It's just another cycle. And then it fits into the Elliott wave. Now, you can go to ElliottWave.com, I think it is. You go look it up, Elliott Wave. It'll blow up all over the place on your Google. And I hadn't even looked at it in a long time, but I get the gist of what his thing was. It's based on life, emotions, people. I go, but what about this action? What about this thing? And what about? He goes, it doesn't matter. It's all part of it, Ernie. It just happens. That's just the way it is. I'm going, okay. And he's right. And then he's right again. A few years later, he's right. He's right. And everybody's screaming inflation. He's saying, nope, deflation. Well, here comes the deflation. They're cutting the money supply. So what does that mean for houses pricing and all that? Well, it doesn't really matter if you can't afford to buy. It's one reason why the prices go down. If you don't have access to the money, they're not selling it. But the banks do not want to liquidate or foreclose or any of that stuff. Why? Because it makes their balance sheet go to nothing. They individual branches. There has been, if you count, one bank will have a bunch of branches or whatever. If you just count the branches, they have closed in just the last couple of years over 6,000 banks. And they just did more in four states just this last weekend. You know, I think it was like Florida, Utah, and I don't know, a couple others. I mean, do you even need to look anymore? You're like, okay, you know, it's every Friday. They'll come in. They'll close them up. The FDIC is out of money. I think they're like $20 billion in the red already. So what are they doing? They're going to the banks. They're going to, you owe us back fees on, or we're going to whatever, and we found in this ticket, and you should have, and a fee and a fine and whatever. They're doing as much collection as they can. You know what's happening in your life too, man. If there's something or somebody or some agency thinks you owe them some money for something, man, you're getting a thing whether you do or not. Oh, here it comes. Okay. So the M3 is starting to take a big, giant dump. M3 is the money supply, and he stopped reporting it because it was just going stupid up. Well, they're starting to suck the money out of the system. Well, this is, you know, what they normally usually did to try and save the dollars. I think, I'm not an expert on this. It was Volcker was the Fed chairman that came in during the years of Reagan, and they pumped up interest rates to ungodly amounts. I think it was, God, what was it, 20% or something, 23? I mean, it was something stupid. I mean, it was a lot. So they put it up there so nobody, the dollar would be saved. You know, the people aren't borrowing money if it's that high, unless, I don't know how you get to be on the list or you want to pay that much, but, you know, so you're reducing the money supply, trying to save the dollar. Well, now they're trying to do it a different way. Instead of hitting the interest rates, they just reduced the supply of money. So it has the same effect. If you don't have that much money available to lend, what happens? People come in and say, I will pay more. I will pay more interest to get that limited supply of money that is there because I really need the money. Well, what's the difference? It's the same effect. So I'm starting to get more in there. You know, there's going to be a deflationary effort here. There's going to be, you know, prices are going to start plummeting because they don't have a choice. Or hyperinflation, either way, we're screwed. So we are in bad times. You need to buy, if you have extra money, you need to get food, someplace to store it. Don't count on the stock market. Count on yourself and your neighbors and your friends and your family. Peace out.